countries via remote. I'm Diane Roberts, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, November 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump fired the official responsible for spearheading efforts to secure the vote in the presidential election.
This is something that's been brewing for some time.
What impact will the president's actions have on the impression people around the world have of American democracy?
Probably concerning for democratizing countries right now.
And can a Brexit deal be made before time runs out? We'll have these stories and more next. Two weeks after the polls closed in an election he is now projected to lose, U.S. President Donald Trump took to Twitter to fire the official responsible for spearheading efforts to secure the vote. Trump, late on Tuesday, berated the director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, Christopher Krebs, for making what he called a, quote, highly inaccurate statement about the election. The president alleges that the November 3rd presidential election was marred by, quote, massive improprieties and fraud. Those accusations have not been substantiated. VOA national security correspondent Jeff Seldon has been following the story closely, and I spoke to him via Microsoft Teams about the development.
Well, this is something that's been brewing for some time. Late last week, Reuters news agency reported that Assistant Director Chris Krebs, who's been spearheading the election security effort in the United States, not just in the last few months, but going back for the 2 years since CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, was created as part of DHS, he told confidants that he expected the White House was going to fire him. The Reuters report indicated that the White House was not happy with some of the information that CISA was putting out about election security. Specifically, they had on their website what they called a rumor control page, where they put up rumors that were floating around and then debunked them about how they were not true. Chris Krebs, as the director of CISA, was especially active in this, going on Twitter often and highlighting some of the information they were debunking, including allegations and conspiracy theories that there was stolen computer data or programs that were allowing the companies and the deep state to go in and change votes. He said that was utter nonsense. And he gave the facts about how the election is and the votes are tallied. So this was building for some time.
Jeff, do we know who's running the organization now?
We've inquired with both CISA and the Department of Homeland Security about who's in charge. Normally, it would be the number two at CISA, which is the first deputy director, an official by the name of Matt Travis. It is unclear at this point if he is actually in charge of CISA. There were some media reports overnight suggesting that he too had been forced out and that the agency was going to be led by its number three official, Brandon Wales, but we've been unable to confirm that. On the overnight, one of the key DHS officials, their senior advisor on election security, Matt Masterson, tweeted from his personal account saying that the mission does not change, and he added to that the hashtag Protect2020, which is something that had been popularized by both CISA and the FBI in the lead up to the election.
Really quickly, what's been the reaction to Krebs being removed from his post?
There was a lot of reaction from lawmakers, but also from state officials. The Vermont Secretary of State tweeted out after the firing, "This is a dark day." The director of CISA can be fired for adhering to the truth, as the tweet put it. Other lawmakers have condemned the firing. The former chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, a Republican, also Senator Richard Burr, also came to the defense of Krebs, and some other Republicans have also stepped forward saying that there was no reason to fire him.
Jeff Seldon is VOA's national security correspondent. President Trump continued posting accusations of voter fraud on Twitter Tuesday night, something that the social media platform flagged as being in dispute. With Joe Biden the projected winner of the 2020 election and recognized by nearly every domestic news organization and world leader As the president-elect, how do the president's actions affect the office of the president, the transition to the next administration, and what is the larger impact of President Trump not conceding the election on American democracy and how people view it abroad? To tackle those questions, I spoke with Craig Albert, a political science professor at Augusta University in Georgia.
Well, it may show our strategic adversaries overseas that there might be a weakening of our democratic system, of our institutions. Our adversaries could take this as a hint that they can use what's going on in America to kind of disavow the democratic processes in their own countries. And I'm thinking here specifically of Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea, that might be able to take this as an example of political instability and to show why their regimes are much better for their people than any type of democratic process would be. So it really could harm or dampen the democratic movements in other countries. With that said, however, I think most of the United States' allies will look at this as something particular to President Trump, and that it's kind of just a bump in the road for the American political institutional process. And once another president, obviously at this point, President-elect Biden will come in and stabilize and normalize the institutional processes of America now. So I think that some strategic adversaries will see this as a kink in the chain, and allies will just view it as something peculiar to President Trump.
Differently from allies, what about emerging democracies? You in diplomatic circles, you talk about soft power. Does this kind of transition between the Trump administration and the Biden administration, where you have a president who has not conceded and is continuing to bring forward widespread allegations of voter fraud without evidence, does that harm America's diplomatic mission abroad, especially in countries that have emerging democracies?
This is something that the Trump presidency has been overall, is that he has lessened the importance of America's soft power and America's diplomatic presence, and really harmed America's reputation on the international scene concerning soft power. And this was all explained. I think President Trump meant to do this, and he explained it in his national security strategy of 2017, where he was really going to rely on America first, a kind of a realist, hard power, quasi-isolationist type of strategy where the United States is going to do what's in its interests first, and it's going to rely on all its power sources and able to get its interests in the international arena across. And so his administration has lessened soft power. So I think this, on top of 3.5 years of using more hard power than soft power, has really added to that understanding. So it's probably concerning for democratizing countries right now, because they might see it as a way that they can be destabilized as well. It might not be democratically as institutionalized as the United States. So if the United States is having issues, it could be a warning sign for democratizing countries as well. And that could push them away.
That was Craig Albert, a political science professor at Augusta University. Facing charges of censorship, the CEOs of Twitter and Facebook appeared before a hearing of U.S. lawmakers on Tuesday to defend actions taken during the recent U.S. elections. VOA's Tina Trin has that story.
The CEOs of Facebook and Twitter made virtual appearances on Capitol Hill Tuesday, testifying before a U.S. Senate committee for the second time in 3 weeks. Much of the criticism leveled at Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg and Twitter's Jack Dorsey was not new, but it came in the aftermath of the recent U.S. elections. Senator Lindsey Graham is a Republican senator from South Carolina.
But when you have companies that have the power of governments, have far more power than traditional media outlets, something has to give.
Social media sites' policing of misinformation, hate speech, and other issues have long been called into question by lawmakers of both parties. Republicans accuse the sites of censorship. Senator John Cornyn is a Republican from Texas.
While we would never let the government regulate what the press writes or doesn't write, essentially we are allowing private companies, which are now de facto public forums, to regulate that speech.
Democrats say the companies need to do more to prevent being used for spreading falsehoods. Senator Richard Blumenthal is a Democratic senator representing Connecticut.
So you have built terrifying tools of persuasion and manipulation with power far exceeding the robber barons of the last Gilded Age.
The companies acknowledge reforms are needed. Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook.
I believe we are well overdue to update the rules for the internet around content, elections, privacy, and data portability.
Twitter's Dorsey pointed to the impact algorithms have in determining what users see.
That is why we believe that we should have more choice in how these algorithms are applied to our content, whether we use them at all, so we can turn them on or off, and have clarity around the outcomes that they are projecting.
Experts say the company's appearance of being open to change is new. Paul Barrett is the deputy director of the Center for Business and Human Rights at New York University.
The companies are clearly signaling that they are trying to find a way to compromise with members of Congress in coming up with a new regulatory framework.
Most likely, say experts, any new law will call on the tech companies to be more transparent in how they make decisions about content to label or block. And as long as social media has the power to influence and sway opinions, there will also be scrutiny. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
And still to come.
As it stands now, yes, it is this single party in LegCo.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
When stars like our sun die, they expand into a red giant as it burns through what's left of its fuel supply. As the star gets bigger and bigger, it's expected that any solar system object in its path, including planets, will be engulfed and incinerated. What remains of the star afterwards is a small, hot, and dense cinder-like core called a white dwarf. A team of astronomers using space and ground-based telescopes say they found what might be the first undamaged planet to closely orbit a white dwarf. The object, identified as WD-1856b, is Jupiter-sized, is about seven times bigger than the white dwarf, and orbits what remains of its star once every 34 hours. The planet-like object and the white dwarf are located about 80 light-years away in the constellation Draco. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. British Business Secretary Alok Sharma said on Wednesday that London hopes to get a European Union trade deal, but acknowledged that there's still some way to go before a deal is sealed. This comes as EU leaders are preparing to meet on Thursday. To get more, I caught up with reporter Catherine Field in Paris to get a preview of the talks.
The real problem for them this time round is going to be the budget, and particularly the budget which they agreed at a summit in July for COVID recovery. That's a 750 billion euro recovery package. The Hungarians and the Poles have refused to agree to the strings that are attached to that budget because it's linked to adherence to the rule of law. So that is now completely out of the window. They've got to somehow get it back on the table, get everyone back to a time when the economies in Europe are really lagging behind and need this new economic input.
Speaking of economic input and the economy, the European Union just announced what they're calling mini tariffs against the United States. What details can you share with us?
This is sort of, if you like, a green light to President-elect Joe Biden, just to say the European Union is there. Let's not forget that EU-US trade represents 30% of world trade. The EU and the US are the world's biggest exporters, looking at something like 600 billion euros worth of trade between the two. So there has been this animosity between the EU and President Donald Trump. There was a feeling that he didn't take it seriously. So it's been a first step. The EU will scrap some of the tariffs on lobsters coming in, and the US will reduce duties on some of the products that the EU is sending to the US. So that is a first step. It's been unanimously agreed. They're happy about it. And in particular, they feel that President-elect Joe Biden will be more on their side because he has been so in favor of Europe.
You know, we can't discuss the European economy without touching on Brexit. We're just over a month away before the deadline to reach a trade deal expires. What's the sentiment there? Can a deal be reached?
Well, it looks unlikely at the moment. We were expecting the EU chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, to give a briefing today to EU ambassadors. That's now been cancelled. There will possibly be one on Friday. Certainly, the clock is running out. The agreement has to then have some sort of ratification process. It has to be ratified by the member states. It has to be ratified by the European Parliament. Well, they're not going to get to that. They're not going to get this wide scope agreement done in time because come mid-December, the European Parliament closes shop for the rest of the year. And of course, December 31st is Brexit Day. That's the end of the transition period. So it's not looking good. There doesn't seem to be any of the good mood music which we would usually have. They are still stuck on level playing field. That means everyone would have the same rules when it comes to state aid. And they also can't agree on fisheries.
Catherine Feel reports from Paris, France, where she was speaking to me via WhatsApp. The Israeli military says its warplane struck Iran-linked targets in Syria overnight. Israel said it was retaliating for what it called an Iranian-sponsored operation, in which Syrians planted explosives near an Israeli military base in the occupied Golan Heights. Syria's state media says the strikes killed 3 soldiers, while a war monitoring group said the strikes killed 10, including at least 5 Iranians. Israel has launched hundreds of strikes against Iran-linked military targets in Syria over the years, but rarely acknowledges such operations. According to a UN nuclear watchdog report obtained by Reuters News, Iran has begun feeding uranium hexafluoride gas feedstock into the advanced uranium-enriching centrifuges at its underground plant at Natanz. The move is the latest breach by Iran of its nuclear deal with major powers, which says it can only accumulate enriched uranium in older machines, and those are the only ones they can operate at an underground plant. In 2018, U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew the United States from the agreement, which its predecessor, Barack Obama, had negotiated. Not long ago, the U.S. Treasury Department on its website said that Washington was to impose additional sanctions on Iran. There are reports that people are going hungry in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region as roads are blocked, airports are closed, and the federal government marches on its capital in a final push to win a 2-week conflict. The local rulers of Ethiopia's Tigray region said on Wednesday that they would never surrender to federal troops and would soon defeat the offensive. The Ethiopian government says this is a limited military action against some members of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, while the TPLF says this is a war against Tigray. The United Nations on Tuesday called for the protection of civilians in Tigray as Ethiopia's prime minister declared the final and crucial military operation will begin in the coming days. Police in Hong Kong arrested 3 former lawmakers on Wednesday morning over incidents several months ago in which foul-smelling liquid was thrown in the city's legislature, an act that police say was intended to cause harm. Justin Solomon is in Hong Kong, and he shared with me the details on the arrests of Ted Hu, Eddie Chu, and Raymond Chan via WhatsApp.
Well, so basically, these 3 lawmakers were charged with disrupting 2 LegCo meetings, one back in May and one in June, where the final votes were taking place on the National Anthem Bill. And that law was, of course, to make it illegal to, in essence, disrespect the Chinese national anthem. And during those 2 meetings, in one instance, a foul-smelling liquid had been released inside the chambers, and they had to evacuate it. And in another instance, a similar foul odor was released, and these lawmakers were charged with committing offenses under the Legislative Council Ordinance.
Justin, Hugh, Chu, and Chan are all part of a group of 15 lawmakers who recently resigned. But these aren't the first pro-democracy or opposition lawmakers to be detained or arrested.
Earlier in the month, seven other opposition lawmakers were charged with interfering with LegCo officers in what was a very heated session in the chamber in May, I believe, that turned into all-out chaos. So you combine these arrests with, of course, the four members that they basically disqualified last week.
So where does this leave the Legislative Council? You had the mass resignation of pro-democracy lawmakers. The only members that are still sitting in LegCo right now are the pro-Beijing lawmakers. What kind of effect is that having on the administration of Hong Kong?
Without these lawmakers there, LegCo is now without the representation of the pro-democracy groups. And so there is a fear by some folks here in Hong Kong that LegCo is turning into just a rubber stamping organization and that will just approve all orders from Beijing.
If that's the case, what really can be done? Because after these lawmakers resign, you're left with only pro-Beijing lawmakers in the Legislative Council. And Carrie Lam has postponed the next election into 2021. So what happens in the meantime? You don't have opposing viewpoints in LegCo. So is it just one party passing legislation for Hong Kong?
As it stands now, yes, it is this single party in LegCo that will be passing whatever goes through. And, you know, yesterday we heard from one of the highest level officials for Beijing in Hong Kong who supported that and said that patriotism is essential and that I believe in his words, it must be the bedrock of the government. So clearly it's something that Beijing is in support of and the pro-Beijing lawmakers here in Hong Kong have the backing of the central government.
Justin Solomon reports from Hong Kong. And you've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On the 41st anniversary of the takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, November 4th, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo pointed out that the Iranian regime continues to take hostages to advance its malign agenda. He called on Iran to release wrongfully detained U.S. citizens Murad Tahbaz and Siamak and Bakir Namazi, as well as to account for the fate of FBI agent Robert Levinson, who was abducted 13 years ago. But, as Secretary Pompeo declared, these innocent people are not the only victims of the Iranian regime's brutality. The regime's longest-suffering victims are the Iranian people, and they deserve better. The recent report by Javed Rehman, UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in Iran, supports Secretary Pompeo's assessment. In comments to the UN General Assembly on his report, Mr. Rehman said the human rights situation in Iran is characterized by systematic violations of human rights and impunity. Citing the regime's brutal response to last year's anti-government protests, in which hundreds of people were killed, Mr. Rehman said Iran must conduct an independent, impartial, and transparent inquiry into the violent crackdown against protests in November 2019 and January 2020 and bring human rights violators to justice. But the actions of the regime show that transparency and justice are of absolutely no concern.
The use of torture and harsh sentences against those who protested, the harassment of victims, calling for justice, and the lack of accountability for those responsible.
Special Rapporteur Rehman also cited the death sentences given to protesters after forced confessions and the alarming prison conditions for political prisoners, including lawyers, journalists, conservationists, and human rights defenders.
A clear pattern is emerging in an attempt to silence public dissent over the social, economic, and political situation in Iran.
As Secretary Pompeo has said to Iran's leaders, true prosperity will only come to Iran when you cease terrorizing your people and jailing them. Treat your people with basic dignity, to which every member of mankind is entitled. That was an